the naming of things. Is it man or beast? A philosophical question to be sure, and even if then the answer was to be beast, perhaps the better question was is there a facility to rise to the better angels of his nature? For was not man of form a beast? For all that man, he, or she, or it, or permutations and complications of sayings, had named all things in a mongrel polyglot cacophony. Hank ducked a crumbled brick and considered the bravura of daring to name a thing. Eyes to the heavens and depths, a bare fraction of the total. Everything that walked and swam and crawled and swept the sky, which returned to the essential question, was it man or beast? The desire to name and thus divide. The turnip that would have caught him square in the forehead had he not snatched it from the air. Hank said, I thank you, good woman, for providing this poor student of natural philosophy with some small sustenance for this day. For I know with winters long and stretching each year, crops are sparse and difficult to come by. Then he bit into the turnip. It was hard, weathered from too long a time in some sparse cellar, but it was sustenance for the mind and body that the mind could then continue to soar. The rest of the market-day crowd gave their own contributions, in equal part rocks and vegetation. The produce he caught, and the rest he returned to the ground from whence they came. It was not his aim to rile the crowd to more than some meager repast. Thus word and thought and deed, he cached his findings upon his person and caught the lip of the nearby wall and followed the chimney-sweep steps onto the roof of the world, or more accurately, the roof of Edinburgh. His small corner of the world, no man an island, and for all that Hank lived upon an island. He leapt lightly from the rooftop to catch a corbelled cupola for stargazing, and then on to further rooftops. When he had come to Edinburgh in search of an education, Hank's thoughts had been to books rather than feats of prestidigitation. However, as he leaped from brick to slate to wood, it seemed as if one was intimately tied to the other, the alignment of the physical, activity, and mind. He dropped from the roof to the windowsill of his loft rooms from the sixth floor of a building more valued for its proximity to the university than its resplendent odor, that and for its sparsity of required remuneration. For all that most cavilled to climb six flights of stairs to lodgings, Hank never used them. The tall roofs of Edinburgh were his solitary road. He swung in the window and but left the wooden shutters open for the illumination that the day might bring to the garret of the damned, for in the manner of college students, they so liked to refer to it. Having placed upon the floor in the finest of copper plate script, for me nothing was created but eternal things, and I endure internally, abandoned every hope, ye that enter. Hank had argued for once more to see again the stars, that all like good guarded knights of thought that they might aim for more celestial spheres. However, Anthony had overruled him, and as good Master Stark owned the building, then in the manner of all good merchant princes, he got to name their lodgings. Which formed the reflection that if Machiavelli thought it was better to be feared than loved, he'd never had stones thrown at him in a village market, an experience that Hank found significantly broadening to the philosophically minded. All these thoughts and some other stray meandered, while Anthony failed to look up from the project he was currently tinkering, some brass device of perpetual motion. He was also nursing a leather sack, and the day not yet half over. But then, for Anthony, it was still the night before. Anthony glanced up at Hank, made a space from the metal of some small morsels of more digestible nature. Anthony said, "We've got coin for food. Corrections, you have coin for food." "I am of humbler birth," said Hank. He began to dice his vegetable haul for stew. Anthony looked in need of food and a break, his lips stained with wine and his fingers green, grained with gray grease. Anyway, it was a beautiful day for a stroll among the good citizens of our metropolis, as a respite from our studies. It's a beautiful day for skylarking under the rare sun. You should try it. We don't all have your skill at blind leaps of faith, said Anthony, pulling aside a small pliers to lean back in his chair. Hank sent rib vegetation to their watery doom in a small pot on top of their brazier. Don't forget my simian cognition. Food beginning its bubbling way, Hank looked at his friend, pale-faced and puffy-eyed. Hank said, I know that university students are supposed to be renowned for their debauch and drunk, but combining mechanics and alcohol would seem to be a recipe of some peril. Anthony shrugged. Drink wine and you will sleep well. Sleep and you will not sin. Avoid sin and you shall be saved. Ergo, drink wine and be saved. Some proverb or other. Anthony drank a sip of wine and then rubbed his eyes. Not the best argument under the circumstances, my friend. Hank stirred the pot. However, Titus Massius would tell us that the greatest evil of wine is that it seizes the foot. It is a crafty rustler, thus I assume why you are still sitting. When men drink, Then they are rich and successful and win lawsuits and are happy and help their friends. Stark waved his hand at their present lot. Quickly, bring me a beaker of wine so that I may wet my mind and say something clever. Aristophanes. While Diogenes would have it that he liked best the wine drunk at the cost of others, this cost at times too high. Hank picked up Anthony's current puzzle of mechanics. In vino veritas, Pliny. Anthony drank from his sack. It helps me think. I should think the opposite. Before when the wine is in, the wit is out. Thomas Becon. Hank turned the device over in his hand. This, for example, is not your finest work. He held his hand spread and gently touched the moving pieces. It hardly budged. Motion at all would be difficult, much less perpetual. Anthony gave Hank the long bowman salute and took back his toy. But they'd had this conversation before, and would again, so Hank assumed his favorite perch to read Galen's De Fabricia, which would be under discussion tomorrow, occasionally reaching down and to stir the pot. He was deep into the study of the spinal cord of the Barbary ape when Anthony said, "Do you ever wonder why?" Anthony was staring at the whitewashed wall. He'd taken the toy apart again. "Ah, we come to the philosophical depths of wine," said Hank. He dropped to the floor as a courtesy, also for the greater ease of tasting the repast. Soup is not easily eaten upside down. "I mean, look at you," Anthony waved at Hank, nearly oversetting the brazier and pot. "You cannot attend classes openly without being branded a witch. Well, no one gives me a second glance. But we are we any different under the skin?" Hank took the sack from Anthony and drank a swallow. He said, "There comes a time twixt life and death when all men stop to catch their breath. We ask the stars, why? We question our lot. The heavens open wide and reply, why not?" Hank shrugged. "Man or beast? I would be an automaton." Hank spun a fragile gear upon the rough wood, like the golem of old Prague. Then he swept the metal to the floor in a shower. "You should be the brooding one, while I, the happy skylark." Hank ladled some soup into a bowl, added some small herbs, and handed it to Anthony, perhaps and perhaps not, according to some lower devils of our nature. "Now then, over this freely given meal of neighboring courtesy, explain to me the principles of your machine." Anthony snorted, but he ate his soup and explained until sleep and the mild soporific in the soup overtook him. Hank tucked him into his pallet and decided to resume Galen from the chimney top. It was a beautiful day.